Blog Talk Radio.
Say happy Sunday again. We're back on Just Believe Radio today on the Rightstream Network. And I want to wish everyone a happy Sunday. I hope you're having a beautiful day so far. It's 1 o'clock here on the East Coast. And in the Northeast, we're having a lovely day after a few days of rain. It's nice and warm and summer-like. So that's great. My name is Lisa Tarvis. I'm your host. I'm also a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive, and I'm an author of the book Just Believe, and of course now a radio show host as well. And again, our show is called Just Believe, and it airs every Sunday at 1 o'clock and at 1 o'clock Eastern time, by the way. Each week, we're having different guests on, special guests who are experts in the fields of spirituality, holistic health, metaphysics, and even paranormal topics. If you're an expert in one of those areas and would like to be on the show, make sure you send me an email at lisa@lisatarvis.com. That's Lisa, L-I-S-A, at L-I-S-A-T-A-R-V-E-S.com. Today we have two great guests on, and I'm really excited about both of them. They are both authors, which is not unusual for the show. My first guest, and I never asked him if I was pronouncing his last name right, but I'm going to just take a shot at it and hope that I am. His name is James Goyce Jr., James Goy Jr., G-O-I, I'm assuming that's Goy, but I'll find out when I get him on the line and talk to him again and have a chance to ask him. James is a speaker, a mind power coach, and the author of How to Attract Money Using Mind Power. His book is a serious work in which he quotes 160 other books. The U.S. edition is available worldwide through Ingram Book Company, and a second English language edition is available through the Indian subcontinent through Indra Publishing House in India. So the book has been published in several different languages: Arabic, Spanish, Italian. James has published a free monthly newsletter called, e-zine called Mind Power and Money E-zine since January 2008. Since 1978, James has read hundreds of books in an effort to understand the laws of life. He's lectured on metaphysics and spirituality with an emphasis on manifesting abundance. James believes that in today's economy, the transformation he shares is more needed than ever, and that his teaching could mean the difference between financial success and financial ruin. And for any financial ruin, and this is for any individual, any family, any business organization, it's not geared towards just one area or one type of situation. I've had a few moments to read through it, to read the book, and it's actually a very easy read, very concise, very well written. I like simple books. I like books that are just easy to read and that just flow naturally. And I thought this one flowed really, really well. Had some great practical metaphysical tips. So let me get James on the line with us here. James, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Hello, hello. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good wherever you are.
Yes.
did I pronounce your last name right?
You certainly did. It's James Goy Jr., right?
Oh, good. Okay. All right. I was a guest. I assumed it was, but, I wasn't sure. Anyway, and when we were talking before, I never did ask you. But anyway, I had Skype issues today, and I was having all kinds, and I'm getting over a cold, which is why I sound a little fuzzy if anybody's listening and thinks that I sound sad. I'm not sad. I'm very happy. I just have a cold, and I can't talk very loud, so, and that's very unusual for me. I know I'm a loud talker, and I'm a long talker, and a blabberer, so this is a little unusual for me, but I'll be back in my game by next Saturday, or by next Monday, don't worry. This book is really fascinating to me, James, because I think so many people are, well, I know so many people are struggling with financial issues right now. And I think that, we talk about the law of attraction and we talk about, some different ways to attract positive, things into our lives and things that we need or want, physically, materially. But I think people get the law of attraction a little confused, and I think some people use it incorrectly. I know they do because I teach this a lot, and I see a lot of people saying, well, I want, I need, I, you know, and doing all the, and this stuff, and I'm like, well, then you're attracting more want and more need. You need to, you know, I'm always telling them they need to raise their vibration and the feeling of what it's like to already have whatever it is they have, you know, the extra zero or a couple zeros in the checking account and, whatever. And then that's how that they can go about, you know, then sending that kind of message out to the universe and then attracting that. Your book's like that, but it's also different because this we're focusing. The way you write about it, I think is a little easier and more complicated too. It's simple. It's going to be easier for people. I think that people, like I said, the law of attraction thing is so complicated that that people just have misused it. And I think this is a little bit more of a step by step sort of make sense kind of way. Of looking at it. But first, before we get into all that, why don't you tell everyone, tell the listeners, and by the way, anybody that has any questions for James, you can call in at 347-945-7246. 347-945-7246. Press 1 and you'll be in the queue. Again, he's the author of How to Attract Money Using Mind Power. Okay, so what was your motivation for writing a book about attracting mind, or about attracting money using mind power? What made you do that?
Well, many years when I started teaching to small groups, and as you stated in the bio there, my emphasis, you know, I'm very spiritually oriented, metaphysically oriented, but my emphasis is often on attracting abundance, because I think if people don't handle that hurdle, then their life is just, you know, not really their own, their energy is not their own, their time is not their own, and they can't grow in these other areas. But what I noticed was that whether people were new to this, and especially surprisingly, those who had been studying metaphysics for sometimes years on end, just like the new folks, universally seemed to have a problem with money, like there was some kind of a block. And I always used to think, well, here's the techniques. Here's how they work. It works for money. It works for finding a wife, getting a better job. It works for everything. Why are you folks having such a hard time with the money part? And it really intrigued me because the techniques are exactly the same. And so I really wanted to at some point, and of course finally did, address that specifically. One area that I found, and the different problems I identified, I've addressed in the book, but such as, you know, self-image and things like this, but one problem I identified is that people, they didn't really have the level of belief. Like money, you know, seems so hard of a topic to some people. Like how could I ever really be a millionaire kind of a thing, that they didn't really put the focus and energy into using the techniques the way they did for other things. I mean, people would say, mm-hmm. I have a wonderful home, I have my perfect job, and just last year I married the man of my dreams. The same guy I visualized, you know, for 6 months, and I finally met him. But why doesn't this money thing work? But when you start talking to them, well, what have you been doing with the money thing specifically? You find out, not a whole lot. Just like the average person, wishing and hoping, but not really being focused. And so, you know, money, you know, some teachers teach that don't focus on the money. And I don't teach that because my experience is when in seeing so many other people and in my own life that when you don't focus on it, you basically don't get it. And so
right.
I think that money is a very it's a wonderful tool. There's no tool in the material world here that can match it for fluidity and for quickness of transferring energy and of making things happen in the physical dimension. And therefore, I think it deserves the respect and the attention. And indeed, it requires the focus to really manifest large amounts of money or, you know, ongoing flow of abundance.
Yeah, I agree, and I think you're right. I think there's something, you know, I think when it comes to so many aspects of our lives and we're thinking about ways to manifest the things we want in our lives, the money part scares most people. You know, we get terrified of not having enough money, and I think that's where the you know, we shut down a little bit because, you know, it's so true. No matter how much you make, you know, you always find a way to spend more, you know, and you think that when you thought when you were 20 that you'd be making the kind of money you're making right now. And, you know, you look at your life from that perspective, it's bizarre. But the truth is that the money you're making now, you would have thought, oh, my God, I'll be in such great shape. Well, then add a big house and a big mortgage payment, some kids, some cars, some, you know, all that stuff to it. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, we have a little bit more going on here than, you know, than I planned when I was 20. So what I'm curious about is, do you think that the fear of not having, I mean, money makes everything happen, you know, without me, you think that fear is the reason that there's more resistance?
Yeah, there's just
more
everything.
People that don't get it?
Yeah, the whole time you're talking, my head's just bobbing up and down because you're just hitting every nail right on the head. And, you know, fear, it does keep people from trying. It forces them into a state of inactivity because they are so fearful of not having that they can't even, you know, try to have because they're just
right.
almost paralyzed by the fear. But so many things you just said, like the fact that, and for people out there who have never really had, you know, two nickels to rub together, they're not going to really get this. You know, they'll hear us saying it. But, you know, when I was young, when I was very young, like in my very early 20s, and I was hanging around, I had moved out to California here and hanging around the beach and stuff, and I knew of this guy, I met this guy, and he had inherited $10,000 from his grandfather, and he blew it in like a year. It was all gone. This was like a year after he had gotten his money. And I thought, oh, my God, if I ever got $10,000 at one time, I'd invest it, and I'd be so rich, and I'd never have to work again, and I wouldn't blow it like
yeah.
this guy did. And
yep.
what you find out is, whether it's tens of thousands or, you know, no matter what the amount is, when you get it, it's never what you thought it was. And, you know, I wrote this standalone quote years ago on this website where I used to do a lot of that thing. And I wrote something along the lines of, if you ever want to be rich, you better plan on having a lot of money. Because being rich is very expensive. Being
right.
rich
yeah.
is very expensive. And when you get there, you find out that it's not what you thought it was. And even, look at, you hear of a famous actor struggling. There was one just recently, you know, a few years later, he's having to sell his mansion or whatever, his beach house or something for, you know, $3 or $4 million less than he wanted. And some of them are going bankrupt. Others have tax problems. Some go to jail. I mean, it doesn't matter what level you're playing at. When you get there, it's not what you thought it would be, and it brings all its own struggles in. But definitely the fear of lack, the fear of not having. And a lot of this right now is coming from the media, just the prevailing mass mindset, our friends, our family. And I teach people, you know, you have to protect yourself from that type of thing because we get so little positive input unless we really seek it out. And the negative is so overwhelming that if we don't try to counteract it, the fear will just bring us to a standstill and we will experience lack and we won't know how to get out of it.
Right. Right. I think that's so true, and it's so, like, you know, when you're saying all that, you know, you sit there, and I'm thinking about all the things that we worry about, and nothing in our lives takes on the degree of worry or gives, you know, creates the degree of worry that, you know, with the exception of health, obviously. I mean, health is obviously something that we get so fearful about. But money, I mean, not having, you know, I think money probably trumps everything, because you think, well, if I don't have enough money, I can't even fight this disease that I have or this illness that I have. But if you hadn't spent all this time worrying about money, you probably would have never got that disease, you know, or that illness. I sit there and I have a common cold that I know where I got it from. My husband brought it home. He's an airline pilot. He brings home germs from the airplane all the time. And he started with a cold, and then I got a cold 3 days later, and I know where I got it from, but I sit there and think, why was I susceptible to this? Usually I don't get sick, you know? And so I'm sitting there, you know, even when he brings germs home, I don't get them, you know, I don't let them get me. So I sit there and I start questioning, what was I worrying about? What was I focusing on that I wasn't paying attention enough to my health? Where was I putting my energy? You know, instead of into taking care of myself, I was putting it into worrying about what. You know, and a lot of times it comes down to financial things. A lot of times it does. And I think that I think that this is just so hugely important, which is why I wanted you to be on the show. And I think that, again, your book, you know, like you said in the beginning, your book covers not just it doesn't just work for the money aspect, but it can be applied to any area of a person's life, no matter what they want in their life. Money just happens to be the focus, because I think everything else kind of does seem to fall into place when we at least get rid of that worry. You know, we don't have to be rich, but we have to stop worrying about it.
Right, right. You know, too much is not a good thing, but not having enough is never good. And but you were talking about the money worry really trumping all others, and also it goes back to why I wrote this book. The other reason is really because money affects every single other area of life. I mean, we all fear for our physical safety, for instance, but what keeps us safe in this society? To a large degree, it's common sense, of course, but to a greater degree, it's money. Because if you don't have enough money, you simply can't live in a safe neighborhood. You have to ride the subway or the bus instead of, you know, taking a cab or being in a car. We're afraid of starving. We're afraid of not having a roof over our heads. We're afraid of getting sick. Well, guess what? Money speaks directly to and can improve and help us meet our goals in every single one of those areas and every other area of human endeavor. People say, well, what about spiritual? Well, sure. If you're working a job that is a soul-draining, you know, exercise in just terrible energy, and you're doing it 40 hours a week, and, you know, how are you supposed to be able to have time and energy and the presence of mind to do your spiritual work? If you don't have the money, you can't even buy a book. You can't even go down to the bookstore or on Amazon and get yourself a book in a spiritual subject you're interested in, much less take an excursion to India or something. So no one's told me an area yet, and I'm open if they find one, of life that cannot be either directly or indirectly improved by having more money or sufficient money. And that's why money, I mean, Just think of how we all spend our days. Most of each day for the average person is geared towards money in one way or another. It's just a major factor that we cannot deny and that we have to deal with as modern, civilized human beings. And indeed, and in fact, this has been the case for thousands of years, that money has been in existence.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, you've always had to, you know, whether you were trading, you know, parts for a goat or, I don't know, I'm throwing stuff out there now, but there's always been some kind of system in which we've exchanged things we need for other things. And then, you know, the idea of money just made it kind of, I guess, simplified things a little bit, and then we didn't have so many goats.
Right.
I'm thinking goats. My daughter was driving home from work the other day, and she's like, Wow, Mom, I know we live in the boonies, but I actually had to stop my car in the middle of the road because a goat was crossing. And I'm like, okay, that's not normal, honey. That doesn't normally happen around here, let's be honest. That's a little out there. So anyway, I've got this goat thing going on right now. Anyway, so can you teach anyone, can this book teach anyone how to use these mind power techniques? Or does it work best for a certain person? Or, I mean, do you need to have some kind of metaphysical background? Do you, what are the requirements for understanding and for actually implementing these techniques that you mentioned in your book into your life?
Right. Well, you know, if you have a background in metaphysics, you're going to really appreciate this book because, like you said, it's so focused and it doesn't leave a lot of – there's not a lot of ambiguity. I mean, I'm just so forthright and concise with what it is I'm delivering.
Right.
But on the other hand, if this is a brand-new subject to you, and this book, I knew it would be, and that's one reason for the quotes in the book, 160 quotes, I knew it would be the first book a lot of people read because I knew that people would give this book as gifts to people who yet were perhaps not in the metaphysics themselves. And those people I hear back from or I hear back from their loved ones or whatever, they love it and they get it. They get it after one reading. And so it's good for either a seasoned, you know, metaphysical mind power student or someone who's brand new to the subject. And, of course, you need to have a sound mind. I mean, I'm not recommending this to that it's going to help people get out of the insane asylums or whatever,
right,
or take the place of their, you know, medications. And but also people who are in touch with reality. And, you know, reality
right.
is a loose term, and that could be debated what reality actually is. But reality is we all kind of agree that it is at this moment in this world. But once and then the big one, or a big one, is having an open mind. Because I don't care if you've never even heard or you thought, oh, the law of attraction, that sounds like, you know, just some airy-fairy
mm-hmm.
stuff, and, you know, Oprah's gone crazy for having that on her show or whatever. But just
mm-hmm.
open your mind a little. If you will open your mind and just listen to what I have to say in the book or on this show, and so many other teachers, like you said, I quote 160 other books in my book, this stuff works. So just have an open mind and come to it with the intention of proving it right, not proving it wrong. And anyone
right.
can do this. Anyone can do
right.
it.
Right. Right. And I think that's awesome because that's basically what we're trying to reach. And I was with my book too, is you're trying to reach there are lots of books that are written by PhDs for PhDs. When I wrote my book, I wanted something because I know when I was studying for my my degrees in metaphysical science, I already need to have a degree in order to understand what this person is saying in this book. You know, I wanted my book to be very simple, very easy to read. And you know, of course, you get criticized for it being too simple and too easy to read. But you know, people are going to criticize no matter what. But that's what I was going for, was something that if somebody was newly introduced to spirituality or newly introduced to the concept of angels or the concept of energy vampires or law of attraction or whatever, that I had a small part, I was a small introduction to all of these different topics that are huge topics in living your life in a spiritual manner. And when I was looking at your book and going through a copy of your book which you were kind enough to send me, I was like, this is perfect because this is exactly how I like to write a book. I like to write a book with here are the facts, here's what to do. Let's just make this really, really simple. You don't have to have 500 big words that you have to, you know, have a dictionary next to you while you're reading the book. You know, it's simple, it's easy to understand, and it makes sense. It's common sense, really, which I think is the most impressive thing. You don't see a lot of common sense out there anymore. So, you know, that's one of the things I enjoyed so much about it. And one of the things that, you know, that I wanted, one reason I wanted you on the show so much was because I love the idea of just making things simple for people, you know, and not making it a 400-page book when you only need, you know, 100 pages to get your point across. So and you did that very successfully in your book. So now it seems like the economy economy that we're in, so many people being fearful and pessimistic and everything. You know, I would imagine a common question that you get asked would be, can a person still attract money even though the economy is so bad? You know, right now in the situation that we're in, can this really still work with all the, you know, with all the problems that we're having economically right now?
It definitely can work. You know, people are making money. People are thriving today, just as always. But of course, those are not going to be the stories that people at whatever level, including the media, are focusing on, are going to focus on at this time. And so, you know, when there's an old saying that a rising tide lifts all boats. And when times are good, a lot of times we don't have to have an understanding of metaphysics, and we can do really well too, because we're doing all the mind power work without knowing it. We're feeling positive and optimistic about the future. We're seeing people in our industry or our field doing well. We're being told that, you know, we're good at this too, so there's no reason we shouldn't do well in whatever field it is. And so the rising tide lifts us all. But when the bottom drops out and when times get tough and then when everyone's singing a different tune, then, you know, the sinking tide also pulls all the, you know, boats down, except for the ones that are manned by captains who have an understanding of metaphysics and mind power, because they know that it wasn't the booming economy that helped everyone be prosperous before. They know that it was the booming consciousness, because everything is consciousness. Right. Everything is energy first. Everything is thoughts and feelings. Everything here is created somewhere else. And when we know this and we understand how to think, feel, and image in line with how material reality arises and springs into manifestation from this other realm, then we can recreate, if we've lost them, the circumstances we had before, even though so fewer people are doing it now. So mind power and metaphysics not only does work in hard economic times, but it's often the only thing that will. Because unless you change your, what I call your money mindset, and you get your head on straight, basically, metaphysically speaking, you are going to be in the same figurative boat as everyone else. You're going to just be along for the ride, which at this time is a bumpy one. But you can rise above that. And to do that, you have to rise above in your own mind first, and then you will rise above in manifestation here.
All right. Well, let's get to the bottom. Let's get to the bottom line of you know, what you're teaching in this book. The first chapter of your book is on desire. So how does desire factor into attracting money? And is there a reason that desire, being what it is, was the first chapter where you opened the book?
Yeah, and I often say, you know, it's desire is the first chapter of my book, and it's the first chapter for a reason. And that is because unless we can handle this hurdle, then nothing else in the book really matters, because it's the desire that is going to move us toward the goal. And you said before that my book works for other things other than money. It works for any area of human growth or advancement. Because the techniques, again, are the same. But if we don't have a desire for a larger income, for better financial circumstances, to be rich, for a certain net worth or whatever, then we're not going to, you know, study metaphysics. We're not going to even try to, you know, do better than what we're in. We'll feel so happy we have a job right now with so many people out of work that we won't even try, because we'll be complacent. And I'm looking through the quotes from that chapter. Here's one that popped out at me. Orison Swett Marden, he wrote a book called How to Get What You Want, which is first published in 1917. And he said, desire is at the bottom of every achievement. It's just a very basic statement. And those of us in metaphysics know that without the desire, nothing else will happen. And so I teach people to get in touch with what their level of desire is now, to get clear on what's important to them and what they really want, to move other so-called desires, I want to do this, I want to do that, onto the back burner if you've identified this one as being more important or more time sensitive or just more, you know, something you want to accomplish first, because, you know, too many desires. Well, here's one. Here's another one. Elizabeth Town, How to Grow Success, 1904. Desire is the creator, but when desire is spread over a host of things, it accomplishes little. So we not only need to get in touch with our desire, we need to get other desires out of the way, we need to focus on this one, and we need to increase it. That's what I teach people how to do, and then that, now we're ready. Now we have our footing to move forward into the rest of the techniques.
I understand. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, do you get a lot of people saying, well, of course I desire more money? I mean, do you think people don't understand exactly what desire means?
Right. They confuse intense desire with weak wishing. I mean, who doesn't want more money? Ask Bill Gates. You don't even have to ask him. Look how hard he works. You know, look how hard Donald Trump works. Anyone who already has what we think of, the average person says he's got all the money in the world. Why does he need any more? Well, I don't know why, but he wants more. So, but he works from morning till night. I've heard his family talk about it, you know. He works all the time because his desire for the goals he wants to accomplish, and one of them being attracting a lot of money, are very strong. So anybody in the world can say, oh, I'd love to have more money, but not everyone in the world can give up, you know, several hours of TV a week, for instance, to work towards those goals. Those who follow me in my e-zine know, I don't have my calendar in front of me, but I'm coming up on 80 days now. And I've done this before in my life. There's been times when I haven't even had a television, but I turned my television off, for instance, 80 days ago. Haven't turned it on yet. Well, there's one thing that I did recently that I had never done before. It's just so amazing. And if people just think of this, and I just pulled it out again. I got my calculator out. I read that the average person watches 4 hours of television 7 days a week. And I thought, oh, my God, that must really add up, you know. And so I got my calculator out and I started playing with the numbers. And it was horrifying. And then I thought, well, what if somebody could just give up one of those hours a day, 1 hour, and do something constructive working towards their goal, you know, work on that book or whatever. And so I took one times 365 days is 365, of course, divided by 40, which is your standard work week. It's 9 weeks. And I thought, oh, my God, all a person has to do is give up 1 hour of TV a day, and at the end of the week, they've had 2 full work months and another week to work towards something constructive, to work towards, you know. And then so anytime now when somebody tries to get me involved in something that takes my time or this or that, I'm not saying I'll never watch television again. I'm saying I'm coming up on 80 days and I'm feeling stronger all the time, and I've saved so much time that I may have watched television doing other things now. But can you imagine if you just put your mind to something and went to work towards a particular goal or a thing you wanted to accomplish and you focused on it for 40 hours a week for 9 weeks, how much could you accomplish? A lot.
Yeah, I mean, you sit there, you think about that, and I mean, I think about the time I waste. Oh my gosh, the time I waste on, you know, I'm kind of one of those people who, I've been sick for the last few days, so I've been watching a lot of Netflix. You know, it's like just watching it. I'm like, wow, am I wasting time? I could be on the computer getting stuff done, setting up, you know, emails, doing different things, and I'm like, yeah, no, don't. I just don't feel it. And I'm like, all right, so I'm giving myself a break because I haven't been feeling well. But, you know, even when you are, like something major goes on, like you hear, oh, somebody, you know, somebody died or some disaster struck somewhere, and you immediately go and you turn on the news, you know, or CNN or whatever, you know, whatever you happen to listen to. And then before you know it, you're sucked in and you're there for hours.
Right.
Hours have gone by.
Yeah, this has been such an eye-opener for me this time around because there was a bombing that I hadn't heard about for days. And then only because people that know me, they know, don't lay this stuff on him because he's really not interested right now. You know, he has
right,
his compassion
right.
and all that, but he can't help and do, you know,
right.
and he's got his mind on other things. And people know how I am. I have one day of silence and seclusion each week and all the stuff I do. But anyway, you know, I do have to check my email and stuff, and they have the little stories on one of my emails is Yahoo. And so these stories pop up and I see them. You know, some women were kept in a house for years on end. I didn't know about that for a little bit of a while. And then I can, you know, like when I'm talking to someone, like I talk to my father once in a while. He's back in New Jersey. And I'll say, oh, by the way, this story, you know, this shooting, another one was the shooting, one of these shootings I didn't know about for a while. I'll say, what's going on with that? And in 5 minutes, he'll tell me what he has learned in probably... you know, 16 hours of watching the stories on the tube or whatever.
Right.
So I saved all that time, you see. So I'm not saying I don't want any reality, I don't want to hear what's going on, but I'm saying, boy, you know, I'm not going to soak my head in that negative bucket of you know, because there's nothing I can do about it anyway, and I need to have my consciousness in other areas because I am a metaphysician and because I'm very serious about the things I'm serious about. And you know, we were talking about levels of desire, and I say to people, what are you willing to give up? I mean, you know, I have a picture in my mind right now of this guy comes home from work, kicks off his shoes, he's eating a bag of chips in front of the television set, he hears about somebody who won the lottery, and he says, boy, I'd sure like to win $50 million. Well, sure, there's the desire there, but so is the bag of chips. And so the not doing anything at all to move towards that. He doesn't even buy lottery tickets or whatever.
Yeah,
so
I know,
it's all about
I,
level of desire.
I see that all the time. My husband buys them, and he's you know, and we laugh about it, and I'm like, well, somebody's got to win. Why not us? You know, and we joke around about it and everything. But for me, I'll find myself saying something silly like to someone, well, that's not going to happen unless I hit the lottery. And then I sit there and I think, wow, I don't think I've bought a lottery ticket since I was probably 20, you know, myself. I mean, my husband will get them now and stuff, but I mean, I'm not going to hit the lottery if I don't play the lottery. So, you know, it is an interesting concept. Let's move on to your second chapter of the book, which is on belief. So how do you feel that the importance of belief, what's the importance of belief in the process of attracting money? Where does that fit in?
Well, you know, once we get past desire and we've got that handled, then the next hurdle really is belief. And that is that we have to believe, you know, first of all, and just quickly, that, for instance, mind power works. If that's how we want, if that's our path, if we want to apply it to attract money. And then we have to believe that we can actually have the money. And at you know, further levels of this process, you actually come to believe in at least a subconscious way that you actually have the money, you know. I'm working on some other books right now. I actually have several books that are completed but haven't been published yet. And in one I say, I don't remember exact words, but you have to have the thing before you can have it. You know, you have to be what it is you're trying to be before you can be it, because it all happens somewhere else first. So belief is, you know, very powerful. And those in metaphysics, again, know this, that what we believe will always tend to come about. You know, believe is well this. You know, if you as you believe, so you are. I mean, it goes on and on. It's ancient wisdom that people overlook and discount, but it's absolutely true. And so, again, I teach people how to get in touch with what it is you do believe, how to determine what it is that you want to believe based on what you want, and then how to change your beliefs to that. And again, it works like magic once you do it. You know, it's so simple, and that's why I didn't have to take, you know, 300 pages to write, because I always feel cheated when I read a 300-page book, and I think, great, but, you know, you could have done it in 80 pages and saved me a lot of time. And so anybody
and
who wants
10,
to know
and
my...
And probably about $10 too.
Yeah,
you know,
right. It could have been less money.
The book. Yeah.
Exactly. And so anybody who wants to know my philosophy, just open up the front of my book, and the first quote in the book is from Sidney Smith, and it says, "The writer does the most who gives his reader the most knowledge and takes from him the least time." And that is so high up on my priority as being a nonfiction self-help metaphysical writer is to respect my reader's time. I don't like having to wade through all the fluff to find what I'm looking for, and I'm certainly not going to put other people through that either.
I agree. I feel the same way. I'm very, very big on that. And the word, believe, obviously, is one of my favorite words. Why I have everything under the sun, under Just Believe, because that's the name of my book and my radio show and pretty much everything else I do, because I think the word believe is so hugely important, and that it's not so much about teaching people what to believe, but to believe. To believe in something, to grab at something. So moving along, what about expectancy? Is expectancy the same thing as belief, or what's the difference there? Because I know that's another chapter of your book.
Mm-hmm. Well, expectancy is a form of belief. So we can believe things that are true. We can believe things that are not true about ourselves, about whatever. But when we expect something, then we actually assume. Expectancy is a state of assumption. We actually assume that a certain something or a certain set of circumstances is going to come about. It's like if you work and you get your paycheck on Friday, you assume you're going to get it this Friday also, and you're already acting as if you're going to get it because you already
Absolutely.
Know how you're going to spend it or whatever.
Yeah.
And so when we come to expect that which we've determined we want, then that's when we are really working the power of expectation. And Norman Vincent Peale in The Power of Positive Thinking, which is one of those classics in this field, published in 1952, he said it is a well-defined and authentic principle that what the mind profoundly expects, it tends to receive. And that's why from our foundation of belief that mind power works and that we can do this thing and that we can have more money, we actually increase certain levels of our belief having to do with the future to where we absolutely come to expect to have the money. We expect it. We assume we're going to have it. And we're not making contingencies of, well, what if it doesn't work? Because we believe it will work, we expect it, and we're going to proceed accordingly. That puts your subconscious mind and the universe on notice, because they're watching everything.
Right.
That this guy,
right.
this woman is serious, and
right.
we have got to deliver, and they deliver on your expectations. Much of the time. Not always. There's always factors that we don't even know about to say, well, I really thought I'd get that such and such. I really thought I'd win that spelling contest, but I didn't, Yeah, well, did you study?
Right.
Well, no, not really. Well,
right.
Pray for rain, but then get your buckets out and dig your water. If you're praying for rain and you're not preparing to receive the water, then you're not really expecting. And so,
right.
again, expecting, we have to do it at a high level.
I agree. I think that's great. Now, we've talked a lot. We've tossed around the words money mindset. Can you explain what that actually means?
I open with a great quote in that chapter, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. Who hasn't heard of that book if they're familiar with this subject matter? 1937 it was published. Fortunes gravitate to men whose minds have been prepared to attract them just as surely as water gravitates to the ocean. And that's a very powerful statement. And really, your money mindset is the way that you think and feel about money in any way, shape, or form. This is what I really have to drive home to people is I'm talking about if you're thinking about money having to do with the economy in general, your neighbor, how they earn it, how they spend it, the government, the IRS, whatever, every single thought, feeling, and resulting image that you have concerning money is part of your money mindset. And it's going to either be the different elements of your money mindset are negative or positive as far as attracting or repelling money. And you want to strive, you'll never get rid of all the negative, but you want to strive to be positive. In other words, yes, we can point to that corporation and say, look how evil they are, or the government and the tax system and say, look how unfair this is. Yes. But understand that in really harping on that, and unless it's your job, unless you're making it better, griping about it is just hurting your own money mindset. So I tell people, anything having to do with money in any way, shape, or form, no matter at what level or whose it is, think positively about it. Have positive thoughts about it, and if not, at least neutral, because negative thoughts about anything having to do with money will lower the vibrational rate of your, what I call, money mindset, and therefore you will be less of a money attractor. So, you know, what's it worth for you to be able to gripe? Is it worth, you know, $50,000 less a year? I say it's not. And also, you know, we tend to think how we tend to think. So if we tend to think negatively about money or about the government or anything, it's going to spill over into all other areas of our life.
That
so again,
so
the so the positive way, as far, and you alluded to it before, even having to do with health, our emotions affect our health for good or for bad.
Yeah.
You know, the most powerful chemical plant in the world is in our own brains, and it can produce poison, or it can produce, you know, healing remedies and put them into our blood system, every cell in our body. So, again, the money mindset is extremely important, and we need to, and I teach how to, you know, get it as positive as possible.
So what about, there's another area that you talk about, a think and result technique. So think end results, what people are already familiar with the law of attraction. Is this similar to that? Can you go into what the think end results technique is?
Yes, and certainly it's along the lines of what the law of attraction teachers speak, which I do not consider myself a law of attraction teacher or call myself that. I'm a mind power teacher, but all the elements that I've identified in the law of attraction are encompassed in what I teach, and also many areas that they don't usually focus on. But the thing is, it's just a known metaphysical fact, spiritual fact, really, that what we envision, what we think about, there's a saying, what you think about, you bring about. And it's a very true statement. You know, it's easy to remember. It's almost sounds glib. It's overused, maybe, but it's so true. And in that case, since I don't really think it's overused. And so when we think end results, we learn to think about the things we want to create. It's very simple. We also learn to avoid thinking about things we don't want to create, because the thinking and the feeling, the resultant feelings and images, is the creative process. That starts to magnetize the universe to start moving those things towards us and us towards them. And so we want to, and then here's the important thing. We're thinking about what we want to create. We're not thinking about what we don't want to create. And we're not in the beginning giving a lot of time and energy to thinking about how we can bring the results about. Not only are we teaching about, I'm teaching to think about the end results you want, but I'm also teaching don't jump right in and try to figure out all the ways to get it. That's what the guy on the street does. That's what the woman on the street does. And they are having a hard time because they're to the site, they'll say, I don't have any money. I lost my job. I don't have any connections. I only have 1 year of college and then I dropped out. I don't have any, you know, profession. I can't, how can I possibly do this? Well, that's their big mistake, because now they're throwing all this negativity in between and all of these restrictions. Exactly.
Right.
And so by putting all your energy in how to get it, when there are no clear ways to get it, you could have been putting all that energy in the picture of the results you want, and you'll be shown how to get it. Or indeed, it will be delivered right to your doorstep one morning, just out of the blue. But you got to have your mind in the right place. And that's why thinking end results is a very important concept.
Agreed. So then there's so many different things you mentioned in the book, and there's so many different areas that I want to hit on. I, you know, just the opening of the book, the prefix, when you read that, it just makes you want to read the rest of the book. It was real, again, just simply put, boom, you know, people, you want to make money, you know, you can have all the money you want, you know, and it's just, I love, like I said, the simplicity that you're just making it easy for people, and you're not making it so that you know, you have to then have a course in how to understand the book that you've just read. You know,
right.
I don't know. We're so into that right now, and I think the spirituality and metaphysics has just gotten so out of hand because so many of these books, I sit there, I'm like, oh my God, I have to reread that page again. I didn't get any of that, you know, and I'm a metaphysician. How did I not understand that page, you know? And it's just ridiculous. So I really love the idea of it just being a very matter of fact. Do this, do that, do this, and it's not easy. There are major changes that you have to make from within. There are major changes that you have to make to your life, to your thought patterns more than anything else. I mean, it's basically taking yourself from being a negative, self-limiting thinker. And realizing that you can have everything that you want, and definitely more than you need. So you also talk about an activist technique. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. And this is where a lot of people fall down on the job because they supposedly have the desire, they supposedly believe, they're studying. They're doing their metaphysical techniques, whatever they are. There's many to choose from. And they're saying that, you know, they're creating this, they're creating that, as far as money is concerned. Yet, if you look at their actions, if there's, for instance, something that, like sometimes I give the example of many years ago being in the little health food store, grocery store, and there was a woman who was very well-dressed, you know, middle-aged, looked like maybe she was a real estate agent. I was imagining she had a beautiful, you know, whatever, Chrysler or Jaguar or something in the driveway. And she picked up an avocado and said, oh, I love avocados. And then she looked at the price and said, oh, you know, $1.50 or whatever it was at the time. And she put it back down and walked away. And I thought, oh, my God, she could afford, you know, I mean, people can spend $7 for a pack of cigarettes, and yet they can't, you know. So my point is that if we're not actually acting as if we will have the money and that we want to have, or indeed that we already have it, then we're telling the universe, we're proving our lack of belief. We're undermining so much of what we have, the groundwork we've tried to lay. And I'm not saying to be, you know, irresponsible. But if there are things that are right and good for you to have and you have the money at this time, understand that if you can't bring yourself to make those reasonable purchases because you fear that you might need that money later and not have it, then you are actually creating the condition of needing that money later and not having it. And people,
yeah.
I mean, I really want them to get it that when you become fearless, not stupid, not irresponsible, but fearless in how you spend money, you will become such a powerful money magnet that you will just amaze yourself constantly. And act as if, I look at it as a line in the sand, because unless you cross that line, then you're just playing. You're playing with the kids in the sandbox.
That's a scary line. See, there I can see even me having trouble with that, because I sit there and I have this much money in our checking account and this much money in our savings account. If we have to go into the savings account, I'm going to start getting nervous, because that means that we have spent beyond what we should have spent. And so I can see that line for me being a very scary line to cross, where you're just like, okay, I'm going to live as if I have this extra money. Yeah, okay, I do. It's in, but that's like kind of my, I don't know, my, I can sleep at night fund, you know, because I know
right.
That money's there, you know.
Right. And I'm all for being frugal, and I'm all for being practical. And it's along the lines of what I teach is the laws of money, to respect money. But I also know that miracles happen. When we step out, I don't know if it was William James or Emerson, one of those guys said, do the thing and you'll have the power. And just from my own experiences, I mean, many people, I have a video called Affirmation Story on YouTube. People who have heard me before are familiar with the story of how I attracted $10,000 to get out of $10,000 of credit card debt in a 4 to 6 week period using a very simple technique, one technique, affirmation. And I ended up actually receiving a gift of $10,000 at the end of that time and was able to pay all my cards off. But the part of that story that I often forget to tell, and then there's another story also, is that twice when I was deep in debt, once $10,000 and once the family was, the household was in $50,000 in debt, at my two of my lowest times financially, when I wasn't making enough money to even survive, borrowing money to pay the card payments each month, spiraling out of control, both of those times, I quit my jobs. And that would be the craziest thing a person would ever, you know, think that you should do. When I quit my job, when I was the household was $50,000 in debt, within 3 months we had 2 six-figure windfalls come into the door. When I quit my job, when I was $10,000 in debt, 4 to 6 weeks later the debt was completely paid off. But the part of that story I forget to tell sometimes is that not only did I quit my job, but we decided to live out a dream that we had for years and years, kill it or cure it, of living on an island. So not only did I quit my job when I had $10,000 in debt and no money, but we packed everything up and decided to move to Hawaii. And not only did someone come in out of the blue, someone I didn't know that well, hadn't seen for years, and pay off that $10,000 debt, but when we went to Hawaii, we were going to try to get jobs and just trust the universe and go out on our cards even deeper. So much money came in during our 5 months on Kauai that we never had to work. We never even had to work. We were completely out of credit card debt, and we came back with more just from money miracles, and we came back with more money than we ever, you know. So, again, than we ever had, you know, before, than we had before we left. So I'm all for being practical and frugal and all of that, but I also know that when you really cross that line and you really act as if and you really have complete faith and you are willing to die or end up homeless on the street if you're wrong, my God, the universe opens up. And like I say, when I have made that step, when I have stepped out and just in the face of fear made the what people would think of as the stupidest decisions I could have made, I have had the largest miracles, money miracles, even into six figures in my life. I'm still talking about those experiences today.
Right. Well, I can't wait to read the whole book. Like I said, I got to read some of it, you know, and I loved what I read and the way it was written, and I cannot wait to read the rest, and I'm going to have my husband read it, and we're going to, you know, get really, really rich. So I want
there
to, yeah, that's the plan. So I want to take the last couple minutes and give you a chance to tell everybody where can people find your book? How can they find more information about you and keep in touch with you and see what else you've got going on? Because you said you have several books that are getting ready to be published. So why don't you go ahead and say whatever it is that how people can get a hold of you and all of that.
Okay. Well, the best way, by the way, to stay in touch is, of course, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all that. But for people to sign up for my free monthly e-zine at jamesgoijr.com, or if you don't have a pencil right now, just remember attractmoney.org. It gets you to the same place. That's a free resource, comes in your mailbox every month. And again, the book is called How to Attract Money Using Mind Power. It's available on Amazon and wherever new books are sold. And I just, you know, encourage people to, and go to my website. I've got links to all of my articles and YouTube videos and radio shows coming up and radio show archives. This is like my 112th, you know, radio show today. And so many of them, the bulk of them are available in online archives. So just go to my site, and there's so many free resources. Don't even worry about buying the book right now. Sign up for the e-zine. Start using these free resources. And then just use those. Attract the money, and then buy the book with the new money you attract. That's what I tell people.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. It was so great having you on the show. I really appreciate your being on. Thank you so much. And I think everybody's learned a lot from this, and we'll have lots of archive listeners, I'm sure, and people will be definitely interested in following up on this. And you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, you know, everybody's got money issues right now. So if there's a way of thinking outside the box, and if this is the law of attraction and using your mind to make your problems go away, if this is a little out of the box for you, you know, Hank, it's not going to hurt anything. So I suggest that everyone give it a shot. I know I'm planning on it. So thanks again, James, for being on the show. It was great having you on, and I definitely want to have you back soon.
Thank you, and I'm very open to it. There's a lot of shows that I've been on multiple times, one even 10 times, a terrestrial show out of New York. So I'm a total radio guy and always open to come back. And I think you get a sense that we could talk and talk for hours on end and not run out of things to talk about.
This could have been a two-hour show all by itself, no doubt.
Right.
We could have gone on and on about this, and if I had a full voice and a working face, I would be I'd be able to throw better questions at you too. So, but I really, like I said, appreciate your being on, and we will definitely talk soon.
Sounds wonderful. I'm really looking forward to it, and thanks for a great interview today.
Thank you, James. Thanks a lot for being on.
Okay.
All right.
Blessing.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Same to you. All right, everyone, we're going to come into the second half of Just Believe Radio. We're going to be talking with a wonderful woman named Cassandra James, and she is the author of How to Go from Boohoo to Woohoo in 90 Days. So if everybody just hold on with me through a few commercials, we will be back in just a few minutes.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the RightStream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
Hi, this is Daria Ann, author and founder of the RightStream Radio Network. If you're an author, writer, blogger, or just someone who enjoys reading and learning, I hope you'll tune in to our inspiring, insightful, and educational programs. Every Sunday, join author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis for Just Believe at 1 p.m. Eastern, when she explores a variety of spiritual topics, including alternative healing modalities. A gifted intuitive from a young age, Lisa's book, entitled Just Believe, chronicles her journey from a childhood of seeing and communicating with angels to a career in which she uses her talents to help others emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Each week, she interviews experts in the fields of personal growth, spiritual development, and alternative medicine. Military Mondays with author and military historian John D. Gresham analyzes current events and issues from the perspective of the United States military. Tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern every Monday when John, author of such books as Uncommon Valor and journalist for the Defense Media Network, interviews accomplished guests on important topics like national security and defense and global terrorism. RightStream Tuesdays with Daria Ann airs at 1 p.m. Eastern and welcomes authors in diverse genres, including romance, drama, military history, spirituality, and politics. We also speak social, discussing the benefits and pitfalls of social media platforms and the numerous and plentiful publishing formats now available with various experts in order to help other authors navigate through new technology to reach higher levels of success. During every broadcast, we welcome your calls at 347-945-7246. And of course, the chat room is always open. Can't listen live? No worries. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream to listen to the archives. And be sure to join us for our weekly Thursday RightStream Twitter chat at 11 a.m. Eastern using the hashtag RightStream on Twitter. Rejoice in the flow of creativity with the RightStream Radio Network and the RightStream Twitter chat.
Hi, this is Jennifer Coolidge. The American Heart Association says the disco song Stayin' Alive is the near-perfect beat for hands-only CPR. If you see a teen or adult collapse from cardiac arrest, you only need 2 steps to help save a life. Call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest to the beat of the song Stayin' Alive. Disco is back and it's saving lives. To learn more, go to heart.org/hands-only-CPR.
Nationally supported by the WellPoint Foundation.
And we're back, everyone. Thank you so much for staying with us through the commercials. This is Lisa Tarvis with Just Believe Radio. Going into our second hour now with our with my next wonderful guest, Cassandra James. I'm really excited about this segment as well. Emma's always excited, aren't I? But anyway, if anybody can tell, I'm a little nasally today. I have had a cold for like 4 or 5 days now, and it's just not getting better. So it may require a doctor's intervention thing tomorrow, and that does not make me happy, but you know, sometimes you just got to go with the antibiotics. So anyway, I am going to talk to, like I said, her name is Cassandra James, and I'm going to read her bio. She's a fascinating lady, but she's written a book, which is what we're going to be talking mostly about today, called How to Go From Boo-Hoo to Woo, or I'm sorry, How to Go, yeah, from, yeah, okay, I got it right. How to Go From Boo-Hoo to Woo-Hoo in 90 Days. I think that's just, I think like that's an awesome title, and it's a great philosophy, and a lot of her information in here is really, really cool. So I think everybody's going to enjoy it. Anyway, her bio. Born in Jersey City and a graduate of Seton Hall University, Cassandra has worked in the legal and information technology industries as an employee and entrepreneur. Having suffered through a turbulent relationship within her single-parent household in the early 2000s, Cassandra was estranged from family and severely depressed from a sudden traumatic romantic breakup. Vacillating between thoughts of suicide and revenge, Cassandra went on the web to research how to increase her intuition as a defense mechanism. It was then that she came across the Buddhist concept of the 10 worlds. It was the best explanation of human behavior she had ever encountered. In time, she came to realize wisdom was the healing balm she needed. No longer a victim, she sees life obstacles as a great source of benefit and joy. So, empowered by this new core philosophy, Cassandra has set out to help others to understand the power that exists in their lives for healing and transformation. One life at a time. A member of the Toastmasters International, Cassandra has launched a public speaking career with a vengeance. In her mind, there's nothing sadder than suffering because of lack of wisdom. She works on a lot of community projects and is involved in a lot of different groups, and both locally and internationally. So I want to introduce to everyone Cassandra James. Cassandra, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Lisa. Sorry you're under the weather.
You know what? I'm actually getting used to it. I'm getting to the point now where I'm like, you know what? Enough laying around. I've been watching Netflix for 3 days. I'm like, I've gone through like 3 series, and like, I don't know. It's ridiculous. I'm so tired of this brain dead thing. I'm like, all right, it's time to just take some ginseng and get on with my life here. Anyway, but yeah, so you know, whatever. But anyway, so I just wanted to talk to you. I when I read about what you do and I read about your book and you know your introduction to the Buddhist concept of that I mentioned in your review or your intro. There's the 10 worlds, which is a Buddhist concept that I have read about. I studied Buddhism as an elective, actually, in college, and I remember studying it, and really fascinated with that. But you talk a lot about victim consciousness, in your book and with what you do in speaking and things like that. How do you know? I mean, what is victim consciousness first? Let's start with that. What is it?
Well, I guess the best way to explain it is what's showing up in your environment. So, for example, do you project past hurt, you know, your relationship with your mom and your dad onto your current relationships in your romantic or platonic relationships? That's one great indicator. Also, do your relationships usually end ugly? Because victims always need a villain. So no matter what that person's intentions are or who they are, you can't see them clearly because you're constantly replaying whatever script it is that you came into this world dealing with. So that's another great indication. And do you engage in a lot of blame and fault finding? So that's an indication of your refusal to take responsibility for your own emotions, either because you don't know that you can, or you know you can, but I guess for whatever reason it's just scary a proposition for you to do so. You think that you're benefiting from your current way of interacting with people. So that's a great indicator. And I know that's what was showing up for me in my life, which is what almost pushed me to the point of being successful at committing suicide. But it was interrupted. Huh?
Tell everybody a little bit about your story. How this all started, because this was not your background. This was not where you until you actually had your own personal problem, this was not where your focus was. Can you tell everybody how you got to that place?
Sure. I was in love for the first time at the age of 35. We started out as co-workers, then we were friends, and then we became romantically involved. So I was always very much in my head. So I thought I had done everything right, Lisa. I was a very clever girl. So I thought. So my boyfriend at the time told me he was going back home to take care of some family business with his father. I thought nothing of it. I trusted him completely. When he got back, he told me over the phone that he had reconnected with a former love. Basically, she was back in and I was out. Poof, it was over. Just like that. Almost 2 years. And I couldn't comprehend. He had told me at one point that our relationship was so good that he was the envy of his friends. So what better promotion did he get than that? I really thought he was happy. And then a few months later, it was like, oh, something had always been missing. I didn't know what it was until I found her. So I couldn't make any sense of it. And when I don't understand something, it eats at me. Understanding brings me, clarity brings me satisfaction. So,
And peace. Just being able to understand it, make sense of it, gives you peace. You just get, you can accept acceptance.
No matter how much I interrogated him, he just couldn't make me feel better.
He didn't have the answers. He didn't know either, probably.
Exactly. But I put too much faith in him and not enough in myself, because I was always taught that happiness is kind of at the whim of other people. When things are good, then you're good. And when things aren't so good, then you're not so good. I wasn't taught about the, personal power or what it meant to take responsibility for my life. So I was suffering terribly. I would talk to anyone who would listen. No one had any answers until finally I came across that concept, the 10 worlds. And after I read that, it was almost like a starving person. I just couldn't read enough. I couldn't study enough. So I began studying neuroscience, quantum physics, metaphysics, Chinese medicine, you name it, anything holistic. I became a student of it.
That's awesome. And you are a single mom at this point, too, right?
Oh, no. I was too full of fear of commitment issues. It's like,
you still with me?
Household.
We're having a little bit. I don't know what's going on, but something is breaking up a little bit. I'm having a hard time hearing you. Can you repeat that last part you just said?
Oh, I said no. I come from a single parent household, but I was not a single parent.
Oh, okay. So you were raised basically by your mother.
And my grandmother from my earlier years.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you started based on, you know, you're just not understanding how something could be so good and then go so bad so fast. You started just getting completely interested in everything basically about, you know, spirituality and things like that. And I think that happens to some people, but I find it fascinating that someone can go from being, you know, the being in the frame of mind, you know, you were in at that time, and what in the way you were, you know, and the things you were doing for work to being to soaking up so much of so many different areas of spirituality and metaphysics, you know. I always say metaphysics is a big old umbrella, you know, and that you were juggling a lot of different things under the metaphysical umbrella. So, I think that's interesting. I want to know what you think the greatest, you know, what's the greatest misconception about happiness?
Well, that is dependent upon right circumstances. In my book, what I really wanted to emphasize was that happiness is a skill. It's something that anyone can learn. It's not dependent upon circumstances. It's a state of life that you can develop. All you need is someone to teach you the character traits and then practice them over and over again, just like you would anything else.
Right. It's like taking piano lessons. It's
exactly.
You know, it's like it's retraining the mind, retraining the way. I wrote an article not long ago that I had published that was called I don't remember what it was called, but something is happiness. Could it actually be a choice? Because I really have always believed that's one of the things that I was so attracted to about this book and about your work. Is that that we can just choose to be happy? You know, we choose it. It's a choice. It's a decision we make every minute of every day, and it does take, for it to become natural, it takes reprogramming. You know, just like it takes lessons to learn the piano, or lessons to learn how to play the guitar, or lessons for swimming, or I don't know, whatever you want to do. It also takes lessons and time and planning in order to learn how to just live. And a state of happiness and a state of joy. So,
our challenges are our greatest path to happiness, not the things that go well all of the time, but it's when things are going wrong.
Right.
Learn how
Agreed.
To cultivate.
Agreed, because that's where the lessons are. That's where the guidance is. You know, we're being guided, even though something doesn't turn out the way that we wanted it to. There's always something. Maybe there's something better or something that makes us grow, and makes us better people and happier people. I mean, I think the better we are as people, the happier we end up being. So. You know, I love that concept, and that's and I think that's so very, very true. Is you know, the fact that we do have power over our own happiness, and it puts your happiness onto someone else, and to say, okay, you're responsible. Oh, we're in a relationship now. We're married now, so now you're responsible for making me happy. Go do it. Come on, seriously.
Exactly.
And people do it.
I know.
It drives me crazy because I see so many clients that come in and they're like, well, he doesn't make me happy. Well, he doesn't make you happy because you're not happy. You're not happy. Nobody could make you happy. You know, the Dalai Lama could move in with you and you'd still not be happy. You know, you could just sit here and listen to happy, you know, people telling jokes all day long and, you know, giving you inspiration all day long. If you can't find that within you, if you can't turn that switch to on, you know, to be in the receiving mode to receive the happy things that go on around you, you're not going to be happy. You know, it's not anybody else's responsibility. So I love that.
It's a mood. And I think that's a great disservice to people, because then you're basically, if you believe in that, you're leaving your happiness to chance. And life
right.
is short. We don't know when we're going to leave this realm. So why yep. on earth would you want to waste your time, you know, getting for right circumstances and right conditions when you can cultivate the state of life? I understand it's the road less traveled. I think many people don't know. But, I mean, look at someone like a Nelson Mandela. Behind
yeah.
bars, yet liberated a nation, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I used to admire people like that, but I thought that kind of life state was always beyond my reach. But that was totally false, and I can't.
Well, because I think some people are, and tell me if you believe the same thing. I think there are people that are just, and I talked about that in the article I wrote too, that I call them, you know, positive and negative, PNN personalities, I think. Some people that are just naturally, they just naturally, and I don't know if it comes from past lives or what it comes from, but they're naturally optimistic, happy people. They naturally go for it's bizarre. I'm not one. I mean, I work to, you know, it takes effort for me to be happy, you know, just like it does most people, you know. I have to reprogram my brain too, you know, and I have to, the bad stuff that throws at me, in fact, the more bad stuff that comes at me, the happier I am a lot of times, because I bet I'm walking my talk, so to speak. I'm doing what I know, what I teach. I'm actually practicing, because bad stuff's being thrown at me, and I'm handling that bad stuff in the correct way. You know, in the way that I know is the right way to handle it, and that is a way of reprogramming my thoughts. But there are people like Nelson Mandela and like Mother Teresa and the Dalai Lama, and probably about a billion other people that we could mention, who naturally, I don't know that they had to learn this, you know. I don't know that it was lessons for them. It seems like they were just born this way. Do you agree with that?
To be honest with you, what I think that is we look at people who reached a certain life state, and we don't know, and we can never fathom all of the causes that have gone into them being who we at this point in time. We can never know the complete history. So I don't
right.
know that I believe as quality in interactions with people as a coach. And what I see is basically two kinds of people. People who are very attached to a certain image of themselves, and they, for whatever reason, are not willing to let go of that image. They already, this is hard for me, this is how I am, this is me, and they don't want to part with it. So that makes transformation for them more difficult. The great thing about me being at the point of suicide was, obviously what I was doing wasn't working for me. I didn't have
right.
the luxury or the option of sitting, and when people gave me guidance or shared wisdom with me, of sitting back and being able to dispute them. I had nothing to lose, so I tried it. So that's all I can say about that. I was
right.
I was willing. My heart was open.
Right. Okay, so you say that suffering from a severe depression and being suicidal are kind of the best things that ever happened to you as an adult. How is that? I mean, is that because of everything you learned from that?
Well, what I learned was, much to my surprise, I was really my own worst enemy, no one else. So with that in mind, if I made the mess that I was currently in, I could also get myself out of it. I learned, because I'm in technology, and it seems the two are very far removed.
Right,
but
right.
I guess you would say that because my experience of this religion is very logic-based, it makes sense, it's a practical guide for living. Me being having a technology and IT background, that's also based on logic and certain steps that you take and getting results, you know, immediate results. So it's something that I could really relate to and apply. So I was able to, it's been a long journey, but after 10 years, I can tell you I barely recognize myself at times.
Right.
So
right.
I'm sorry,
No, I completely agree, and that definitely answers the question. Any of the caller or any of our listeners who want to call in and have a question for Cassandra, you can call in at 347-945-7246. If you press 1, you'll be in the queue, and I will get to you as soon as there is an appropriate moment in the show.
That's wonderful.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was saying that's wonderful. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, some of these are a little strange. Sometimes we get a caller, sometimes we don't. But, I always like to offer people the opportunity to call in if they have questions, because this is a really important subject. We're covering it. You cover it in a different way than a lot of other people cover it, which I think is everybody covers it in their own way. If this is what you teach, this is, you have your own way of handling it. But I love the fact that you're in an industry that is so opposite, because I was a tech girl too. I mean, I came from high end telecommunications, and then I was the executive assistant to CEOs and things like that. And they were always big. They were always technology companies. And I used to be the first one on top of everything new, every new gadget that came out. I learned it. I knew how to do everything. If I had to get a job I could barely work my laptop now. If I had to get a real job in the real world right now, I would be so lost, I'm telling you. Because it's like, you get out of that for just a few years, that it's not in your face all the time. And you can get lost very quickly. So, to be that person in that tech field, in that kind of industry, and to do a complete to live in a corporate environment and to live your life in such a spiritual deep, I want to say, way, because
mm-hmm.
The corporate world, it's not deep. It's so different, and it's like, so to be able to have that balance, to be able to look at your life and say, okay, this is how I earn my money, this is how I make my living, and this is important, obviously, and, this is a big part of who I am, but to be able to, I wish I would have been able to, back in the days when I was in that environment, I wish I would have been able to implement my beliefs like you are now into business. Because what you're then able to do is, but the stuff that drives you crazy about being in a corporate environment probably doesn't drive you as crazy. You must be able to, you must look at it differently. Is that right?
Yeah. And it's helped me tremendously. In our practice, we chant in the morning and then we chant in the evening. So it's like you're gearing up. When you sit in front of what we call the Gohansen in the morning, and then in the evening you come in and you kind of wash off the debris from the
right.
day.
Right.
But what is it
done? That's called what?
Oh, chanting in front of the Gohansen?
Yeah. Tell everybody about that, because that's actually. I think it's a really great cleansing and kind of, I don't know, it's a great way to start and end your day. But why don't you explain it to everybody?
Yeah, people really, you really have to feed your spirit like you do your body. And, it's really transformed how I eat, my diet. There's junk food for the mind as well as the spirit. So if you want to really make it in the corporate environment, you know, you have to go in there fortified. And I don't mean in the sense that you want to go in and do some sort of corporate takeover.
Right.
But I mean being able to see people's humanity when they are at their worst, you know, in this cutthroat environment when people are operating from the viewpoint of scarcity. You really have to learn not to be swayed and not to lose your humanity in the process. So basically, I chant Nam, Myoho, Renge, Kyo, just like Tina Turner did in the movie What's Love Got to Do with It. You do it
right.
In the morning and recite a part of the Lotus Sutra. And you do it for however long you want, 5 minutes. The longer the better, I find, you know. And it's like training a puppy to go on the paper. You do your best to stay focused. But if you lose focus, it's okay. You don't judge yourself. You just put your mind back on. There is a point in the Gohan Zen, the ancient scroll or mandala that we look at, where you that you visually look at while your mind is focused on whatever it is you want to manifest in your life. So we don't believe necessarily in the law of attraction. We see ourselves more as creators.
Right.
Did that answer the question for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh. Okay, cool.
You also have a unique view of what it means to become an adult within your own right. What does that mean? What is that?
Yeah. I tell a story in my book, and it's actually kind of a composite of a dear friend of mine. And basically, we all owe it to ourselves that if what we want in our lives is not showing up, to sit and really examine, because our environment, it's like we're all Columbo or detectives or whatever. Your environment reflects the inner workings of your mind and heart. So if what you want is not showing up, then you have to puzzle out what is it I believe so you can override it to get you what you say you want, because some people do just pay lip service to what they say they want. They don't really, I guess, believe they can have it, so they don't really pursue it wholeheartedly.
Right.
But basically, that's what it is. If you want, you can't just accept everything that mommy and daddy told you as truth. Test it. See if this is really working for you. In a nutshell.
Right. Yeah. I think that's an important way to it's an important distinction, I guess. Talk about the philosophy you have on why our vision sometimes appear as obstacles to our happiness, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, why is it our goals? I mean, there's something that gets in the way of our happiness.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes people let that become their excuse, like they have a goal or something they're trying to achieve, and it doesn't manifest as quickly as they think it should. So that becomes their excuse to no longer try. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. What do we put in front of ourselves? You know,
like a vision board.
Exactly. How are we making these things? How do they become obstacles?
One thing that I've learned, one of the greatest gifts you can get in this life is perseverance. So often we're taught to believe that people are overnight sensations. And then when you really hear their story, you find out there's no such thing. I grew up thinking, for example, one of my favorite comedians, Rodney Dangerfield, I thought he was always famous. You know, he didn't. He struggled in show business for 30 years before he made
it. Yeah.
Yeah, and once he did, I mean, he was huge. He most of the, I think the comedians from the 90s he's responsible for, Jerry Seinfeld, Roseanne Barr, so on and so forth. So if you don't achieve your goal quickly enough, then if you don't understand that perseverance is just the greatest, just as great a gift, then that goal will, it won't become your wings, it'll become a weight for you.
That's exactly what I was trying to say when I was phrasing my question, and I swear I'm like my head cold is like making me not be able to express like my thoughts well. But that's exactly what I'm thinking is, like, you know, that's something I think that we all do. We get to an age where, and I think we make up this age. I don't think that I don't think it's 40. I don't think it's 30. I don't think it's 50 or 60. I think that it's self-created and it moves. It changes. The age changes with our age. Okay, so we have this goal in our head that we think, well, this is going to be my life when I'm 30. And then when we get to 30 and we're like, wow, it's not where I was supposed to be. I haven't reached all these goals yet. We begin to just self-criticize and beat ourselves up. And I so many of my clients come to me with this kind of situation. I'm like, I don't care how old you are. I don't care if you're 70. Tomorrow you can start over. You know, you can start from the beginning and make sense of it. And I think that's such a great point with your Rodney comparison, because with him, I mean, think about it. When's the first time do you ever see him looking less than 40 years old on any show that you ever? I mean, no, he wasn't famous when he was young. He was famous when he got older, and then he influenced the comedy industry, the movie industry for the rest of his life. You know, so. Mm-hmm. You're right. That's a self limitation that we put in our own heads, and it's so incorrect and sad that we do it. But you know, and I've done it to myself. I'm like, oh God, I turned 40, and now I'm like, oh, I turned 45, and you know, and now what do I do? And I have a birthday coming up next week, and I sit there, and you can't help it. You know, it's like you look at these birthdays, and you're like, oh my God, do you believe I'm another year older? You know, and it's just, it goes by so fast, and the older you get, the faster it goes. You know, and I have to continually remind myself, this is still the beginning. Today is the beginning of the rest of my life. You know, it doesn't mean I can't accomplish anything. I still have the rest of my life to accomplish whatever I want to accomplish. So,
right.
And
it's really about that, though. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I thought you were
saying. No, please.
It's really about what's at the root of your life. If you're not reaching the goal, then it'll be a source of judgment for you.
Right.
But if you're enjoying life and you're compassionate towards yourself and others, then you can give yourself a little time, but also you want to make sure that you're making actual steps toward the goal and you don't expect it to fall out of the sky for you either, you know? Most
right.
of the time, people who are engaged in complaining aren't, when you have time to complain, then you aren't really, you know, you aren't really, you're inactive. The only
right.
thing that's working is your mouth.
Yeah, that's good.
Because when you have a goal, you're too busy to complain. When you're at the top of your game, you have less time to criticize others. You know, that's just how it works. So the next time you sit and you're beating yourself up, you're not focused on the goal, or should I say your goal is to be up.
Right.
That's what you're doing.
No, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And so many people do it. And I always like to say, I'm the biggest person who has to learn to to walk my own talk, because I'm really great at telling everybody else how to live their life. But you know what? When it comes down to mine, I screw up all the time. You know, I make mistakes all the time. I look at things and you know, and my husband reminds me of this all the time. You know, if I get negative about something, he's like, Lisa, what do you tell your clients? What you know? And I'm like, I know. Okay, I realize I know what I'm doing. I realize what I'm doing, but just give me a minute, you know. And it's your life. It's a lot harder, you know. It's a lot more difficult to make these you know changes all the time. And I think a lot of it comes down to the people we surround ourselves with. And why do you think that staying away, you know, it's the negative people that we're around sometimes. And why do you think it's a less than effective strategy for learning how to deal with people and life in general when staying away from negative people?
Well, I hear people say that a lot, you know, oh, stay away from negative people this, negative people that. But realistically speaking, how can you stay away from negative people all the time when you yourself are in that club sometimes?
Yeah, oh,
so
nice.
We all go to that place. So
absolutely.
Rather than being unrealistic, you should use negative people to help you get better insight into yourself. If it's just like you have a cold now, right?
Yep. I sure okay. do, Cassandra. I sure
yeah.
do.
So if my immune system is low and I go around someone with a cold, the chances are higher that I'm going to contract the cold, right?
But absolutely. Yep.
But if I'm taking care of myself and I'm building my immune system, I can go around negative people, and guess what? I won't get sick, will I? I won't get infected. So
and I've
really
said that 100 times. My husband's an airline pilot. I said this in the earlier segment. He's an airline pilot, and he brings home germs from the airplane all the time. And, and you know, they're like little flying germ machines, I swear. And so he got this cold first, and I'm usually like, I never get sick, you know. So I sat here and I asked when I got sick, and I'm like, what the heck? What was I worrying about? Where was my energy being spent that I got sick? Because you know, this is not normal for me to get something from someone in the house. I have three teenagers. I mean, I raised three kids. I would be like sick all the time if I allowed myself to be. So I sit there and I look at like the last couple of weeks. What did I do to bring my immune system down to the point where these germs had a chance to get to me? You know, I picture myself with those Wonder Woman bracelets, you know, and I'm like germs, fighting off. You should see what I'm doing right now, but you know, like attacking germs, no germ, you know. And then all of a sudden, I'm like down for 5 days with a stupid cold. So you know, you do. You sit there and you look at your life, and you're like, okay, what was I doing? Where was my focus? And I don't think it was just for me. Looking back, I think it's been the last probably 6 months that I've been. I mean, not bad all the time, but that I've been allowing things to get to me that I should not allow to get to me. You know, that I would, if one of my clients were doing it, I'd be like, mm-hmm. What is wrong with you? What are you thinking? You know, but mm-hmm. I was letting myself get there because I spend so much energy. I think sometimes I spend so much energy fixing everybody else that I forget to keep myself well, you know, mm-hmm. and I think that I've done that the last few months. And I think it was months of neglect for me. You know, of self-neglect on a soul level, that allowed me to get something as simple as a cold. Imagine living your whole life like that, and imagine, you know, the problems that we could have with regard to major illnesses, cancer, diabetes, all these different things that we can become get more susceptible to or our immune systems are not able to fight off as well because we're living in a bad place. And as much as I think we shouldn't surround ourselves with negative people, I also agree that you can't not be around negative people. To expect,
right.
unless you're gonna live in a monastery, I really don't understand how you're going to avoid negative people all of the time. You're going to have them, and
if possible.
I sometimes feel like when I go out, especially when I'm going to be with certain people that I know how they, I allow them to get to me in a way. I feel like I go out in a bubble sometimes, and that's okay. Go out in a bubble. You know, you can't. It's not about not surrounding yourself with these people. You can't control who's in your atmosphere all the time, but you can control what you allow, what you take in. You know, what you take in that they're throwing off.
So value for your life by noticing, by becoming more self-aware. How is this affecting me? Why is it affecting me? What is it I need to fortify within myself so that I can expand my consciousness and deal with a greater diversity of people, not just their outward appearance, but their life condition?
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Andrew Carnegie said if you took away his millions of dollars, he could rebuild it, I think, within 2 years.
Yeah.
How? Through his people. People are the greatest resource, and if you're not cultivating a state of life to be able to deal with people, how in the world can you have a victorious life? It's impossible.
Right. I agree. That's a great way to look at it. What do you think is the difference between empowering and enabling? I always love this. I love the answer to this question. Everybody has such a different philosophy on this.
Well, if I am living a life of challenge, then I know victory is possible, and I can teach you how to have a victory as well. We all are individuals, and we're all having different experiences. This is true. But there are certain universal truths that hold up for everyone. So it doesn't matter what your religion or background or history is. It just is what it is. If I go to the top of a building, if I'm Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, and I fall and I jump off, I'm going to hit the ground because gravity is universal. So we've forgotten our commonality.
Right.
In this life, and there are certain things that hold true for everyone. And I'm sorry, I'm rambling. What was your original
question?
No,
you're not. No, it's great. I actually have somebody, a caller on the line. I just want to see if they have a question. Hold on one second.
Oh, sure.
Hello? How are you?
I'm good. Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Oh, good. I've been calling in for weeks, and I finally am on.
Yay!
Yay!
Welcome.
That's
and your name?
Awesome.
Sorry.
Did you say his name?
You got to say my name and area code.
Well, the problem is I only have 1111111111.
Oh, fuck you!
Who's this?
Yeah.
All right, I just disconnected that. Not really sure who that was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
I couldn't hear him clearly anyway.
I know, but he was being a little different. I don't. Maybe he thought he was calling into a different show. I'm not really sure.
Oh,
but that's okay. That's all right.
All right, and then
anyway.
I'm sorry, I remember it. And the other, that's empowering, and then enabling. If I haven't really cultivated a state of life where I know you can have a victory because I've had them, then I'm going to behave in such a way where I'm going to do something for you all the time and completely drain myself. Or the other method is I'm going to keep you stuck in your state of life by being kind of like your yes guy. Oh, that's so true. I'm never going to challenge you. You know what I mean? So that's the difference.
Yeah, I think that's an important, again, I keep saying it's an important distinction, but a lot of what we're talking about today are kind of like different ways of looking at things and different ways of of looking at, you know, enabling, I think enabling has a negative context to it, and empowering has a positive one. And it's awesome to empower. I try to do that with people in your life, and you want to have people in your life that empower you as well. So what is the blessing intertwined with heartbreak? What do you think about that?
Oh, well, it forced me to reexamine my life, but the great thing about heartbreak is it shows you that you do have the capacity to love. And when you encounter someone who doesn't have that capacity, who would you rather be ultimately? So many people make heartbreak a decision to become bitter, but I think it's evidence that you can love, and I think that's a wonderful thing that you want to continue to cultivate. Also, the great thing about heartbreak is I think it gives you insight into love is great, but I don't think love can be your ultimate goal. All the behaviors that support lasting love, that has to be your goal, and that's what will help you through heartbreak, like compassion, patience,
right,
appreciation. We're kind of, love is kind of like the spirituality, but it can't be. It's all of the things that support lasting love that you have to learn to cultivate first.
Right,
and nobody talks
right.
it out.
I agree. That's absolutely true. It's a big thing that's missed, I think. I wanted to ask you, and because I talk a lot about spirituality and things, and not so much focus on religion, but why do you think people underestimate the power of a true religion?
Well, you know, until I started practicing, born into Western and practiced Western and then converted to Eastern, I think in this culture, we have a tendency to think if we know one religion, we know them all, and
mm-hmm.
that's really not the case. So I think the litmus test has to be, does it empower people? Does it give them the tools to empower themselves, or does it use people as tools? That's the difference.
Right, and that's important. I mean, that's I always tell people if you're getting some sort of positive anything out of practicing a religion, you know, whatever it is, whether it's going to church or doing whatever ritualistic practice that you enjoy. That I think, I mean, if you're getting just enjoyment out of it, then that's so important. And as much as I happen to believe in so many different religions, and in fact, there are a few that I don't, as long as they don't get radical, I have no problem with, and think that there's so much to learn from so many different religions. But there are some that you're more drawn to than others, and that's so personal. You know, there's a personal reason for that, whether it's the way you were brought up or just the way you, what you've learned and what you figured out on your own. So, that's...
But in my
conversations
with people, I find that quite a few people tend to look down on organized religion because, once again, they think they know something about all of them without ever having really studied, in depth. Like, for example, I've studied the anthropology of religion. Religion exists to answer some very important questions. Why am I here? What happens to me after I die?
Right.
These are questions that man has struggled with, since he walked the face of the earth. So
absolutely.
How could that be frivolous? You know, it's not. So
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. To be honest, I forget my point now.
Yeah, leave it. Leave it to me. Leave it to me to interrupt and have that be the case.
Well, that's
you
okay,
because
we're not face-to-face, you know, so it's not like you can see when
I'm,
you know.
It's harder.
Yeah.
It's a little more difficult, but one of the things that, you know, that I think is that so many times people get a bad taste in their mouth about a religion, and so they make it about all religions. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
because
they have a negative experience as a child, or they have a negative experience as an adult, whatever, and a religion, that doesn't mean that all religions are bad. I think that all religions are good. I think that there are some things I don't believe personally about certain religions, but for the most part, I think there's so much to learn about so many different ones. And I think that, you know, I taught my kids, instead of going to church on Sundays, because I was never a church person, I would have spiritual hour with my kids when they were growing up, and I teach them about all kinds of different religions. Every religion I studied, you know, we'd go over and talk about it. And I'm like, you guys, when you get older, you decide what you want to do, or if you just want to practice, you know, if you want to just have all of them be part of your life, whatever you want to do, practice spirituality like I do. But I don't want to shove anything down your throat. I want you to make an informed decision based on what resonates with you and what makes sense for you. So,
right, and then that becomes an excuse not to develop one's humanity. And if there's anything we need in this world right now, it's for people to become more conscious and to develop their humanity. And that's something that you have to work at on a daily basis.
I agree. We are down to the last couple minutes of the show, so I want to give everybody an opportunity, give you an opportunity to tell everyone, all of our listeners, how they can find out more about you, about what you do, and where they can find your book.
Oh, okay. Well, my book is available. You can order it from any bookstore. The paperback is also for sale on my website. My website is howtowoohoo.net. So let me spell that again. howtowoohoo.net. And my cell phone number is 973-946-0706 if you have any questions. And my email address is livincreativelyatgmail.com.
Excellent. I really suggest, I do have your book here. I've read some of it. I haven't read the whole thing. It's another one of those, and I always end up picking authors to interview that write kind of similar to I do in a way, which is just kind of keeping it simple, not keeping it too long, not dragging it out. Let's get to the basics. Let's get to the facts. Let's fix our lives and without a lot of fluff. And you've been very successful with your book, and I really encourage everyone who – all the listeners to grab a copy of it, How to Go Boohoo to Woohoo in 90 Days by Cassandra Jeans. And Cassandra, thank you so much for being on the show with me. I hope you can make it back again, and hopefully my brain will be working better after all the cold stuff is out.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much, Lisa, for this.
I've really enjoyed it. Thanks again for being on, and we will definitely talk soon.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody, we're coming to the end of another week of Just Believe Radio. We had two great guests on today, James Goy Jr., who is the author of How to Attract Money Using Mind Power, and his web address is James Goy Jr., James, J-A-M-E-S, GOIJr.com. And then Cassandra James, who is the author of How to Go From Boohoo to Woohoo in 90 Days. And she is at www.howtowoohoo.net. And I appreciate everybody listening, as always. We're going to have a couple more amazing guests on next week covering some different topics. And keep a lookout on Blog Talk and on my Twitter page and my Facebook page for information on next week's show. I don't have it set up yet, but I will in the next couple of days. Check out my webpage at www.lisacharvis.com.
You'll find my links to Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn there, and you'll also find links to where you can find my book, Just Believe. Until next week, everyone, have a fantastic week, and find some joy, find some happiness, and I'll talk to you guys all next week. Thanks for listening.